The flag.
The flag. All right. I think we can begin.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the October 13th teleconference Zoom meeting. We're starting a little late this morning with some technical difficulties, of course. We'll start this meeting at 10:27 a.m. And if everyone can please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm not going to stand. My foot's in a boot. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. And Jennifer will be calling roll today as well as vote. And Jennifer, please.
Okay, Director Kwiatkowski.
Present.
Director Mora.
Present.
Director Armstrong.
Present.
Director Edwards.
Present.
Director Swan.
Present.
All directors are present.
Okay, we would start with approval of the order of agenda. I have a motion to approve.
I move that we approve the agenda.
Second that, Bob.
Okay, it's been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Swan to approve the order of the agenda. Do we have any comments, public or director?
Nope.
Not seeing any. Okay, I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
And the motion carries unanimously to approve the order of the agenda.
Okay, we'll move on to item two, public comment. Members of the public are appreciated for taking the time to attend this meeting and provide comments on matters of district business. Public comments are subject to the 3-minute limit, 10 minutes on an individual topic, although no action may be taken on items not listed on the agenda. Please know we are listening carefully to your comments. Are there any members of the public that have joined the group that would like to speak this morning? I see Bruce Dudley.
Yes, I would like to. I'm trying to figure out how to raise my hand on this one.
Are you on a tablet?
No, I'm on a laptop.
Oh, down at the bottom of the screen?
Mm-hmm.
It'll say...
It's under reactions.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Ah, there we go.
Well,
it's an updated program.
Yeah, not... Anyhow, let's just go with it. How's that?
That works.
You can just go to the little blue thing in the upper right corner of your own picture and click on that, and then you'll see where you can.
All I see is chat and hide video in that blue screen.
That's because your video is on.
Mine won't start the video. It's blocked by somebody. It says you cannot start your video because the host has stopped it.
Oh,
okay. We'll address that.
Anyhow, what I'd like to talk about is the community service unit for the Sheriff's Department. I recently joined it myself. We have a total of 3 people up here between Groveland and Big Oak Flats. And it's a volunteer program. And it assists the sheriff's patrols in a number of ways. And if you go to the sheriff's website, you can actually pull up their website and it gives you all kinds of details. I have a patrol car in front of my house right now. Once the county turns yellow, we are gonna be able to start patrolling again. Right now the sheriff doesn't want us to start patrolling because of COVID. So it has a number of features that relieves the sheriff's department of duties and allows us to take on those duties, like giving out handicap parking tickets, just driving around the neighborhood and observing what's going on. handing out witness subpoenas. Sometimes they have to transport witnesses to the courthouse. Traffic control, scene control for incidents. If the sheriff needs somebody to come block a road off, you would go block a road off and that type of stuff. And the election box down there by the library will be picked up by the people in the unit I'm talking about and transported to the courthouse. We do work in units of two, so there's two people per car normally, and that's for safety. We don't wear a police uniform. We wear a white shirt. They have a shirt they give you. It's got a logo on it and says everything on it. And then typically black pants. So that's basically part of what we're trying to get started here with the CSU unit once COVID opens back up. Any questions on any of that?
You're not armed, are you?
No.
Okay.
Nope. I wouldn't be doing it. I don't need anybody to be shooting at me.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's good. I think it's a good thing. I've seen it used when I had worked at the election office down here in Groveland. They would pick up the ballots and all the information at the end of the evening, and it was great having them do that service and leaving the actual sheriff deputies to catch the bad guys. And I think it'll be great to have a presence of a sheriff vehicle in the area, even if it's not a sheriff officer in the vehicle. Just seeing that one drive around, a lot of people aren't going to know what the difference is.
It's amazing how it slowed people down on the front of my street.
I bet. And everybody that doesn't live here won't know the difference either. So, good. I think that's great. Thank you, Bruce.
Okay.
Any other comments?
They also, if you're on vacation, they'll check your home and make sure it's, you know, safe and everything.
That's correct.
Yeah, it's an awesome, awesome thing. Thank you for doing it.
No problem.
Okay. I think we can move on to, thank you, Bruce, for coming to the meeting this morning. We appreciate it.
Not a problem.
Okay, do we have any other public, members of the public that want to speak this morning, Jennifer? Jennifer, you're muted.
It's just going to be one of those days, I guess. No, I have not received any emails for public comment either. And I don't see anybody else indicating they'd like to speak.
Okay. Pete, did you want to read Virginia's email, or now, or at the time?
When we get to the agenda related to the Measure U.
Okay. Okay, so if we have no more public comments, we will close public comment at this time. Yeah. And let me read this little, are you okay with moving to the action items and returning to the reports? Yes. Okay, we're going to do a little detour here. We're going to move to the action items and come back to the staff reports per the general manager's suggestion. Is that okay with everybody? Thank you. We've got a lot of visitors here and we want to get them
busy. Fine with me.
Okay.
Is okay. There anyone participating that is here for the reports or consent only and disagrees with that or is concerned with moving on to action items? I don't see anybody jumping up and down at this point. So, okay, off we go.
Okay. We have no old business, so we'll just get rid of that one real quick. Item six, adoption of a resolution awarding a consulting services contract to WRT Engineering for the preparation of a park amenities study and plan.
So I want to make sure I'm not muted. Gosh, I love working with three screens when we've had the technical difficulties that we did. So we have had a very, very exciting time with getting a consulting firm on to assist us with doing some significant planning at the park and for the improvements that we've been talking about for 2 years now, with the hopes of securing some of the Prop 68 money to help these dreams become reality. So I want to give credit certainly to Rachel and to Jennifer for their efforts in getting all of this together. I think we really jumped into a good group of people. We've got a couple representatives from WRT on the line that we have that we are proposing that the board enter into agreement with. And we had an excellent process with a number of good proposals received. And I will leave it to Rachel or Jennifer to add more to that if necessary.
I just want to say it's been a long process. It's been very methodical throughout the entire process. A lot of time has been invested both on staff's part as well as directors. And we feel very confident with the recommendation that we are bringing forward to the board.
Second that.
And the committee also with Spence and with Janice did a fantastic job again going through hundreds of pages of proposals and ranking and scoring and conversations and negotiating and really getting to understand what we're looking for and coming up with a really good match for the recommendation today.
Yes, it's fun to, well, not fun like going to a cool park, but it was interesting to see the difference in the proposals and exciting when we agreed on the final choice. So, Pete, do we want to have?
Yeah, at this point, I'll continue, but just a little bit of background on how we got here with basically what we need to do is we need to be able to take a look going forward and make sure that what we design into new park amenities are well thought out and have been looked at from the perspective of flow and design and accessibility and making sure that what we go forward with meets the community needs, you know, because we had a lot of things identified, everything from an aquatic center and movie theater to commercial businesses and trails and bike parks and everything else. So we've got a lot of things that we've distilled down into a couple of really awesome projects and some really good opportunities that we want to talk about. So we've got John Gibbs with WRT, and also I think Andrew is with him, and not Andrew Murphy, I'm looking at names, Andrew Dawson. So I'd like to let them have a chance to introduce themselves.
Great. Hey, thanks, Pete. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. I'm John Gibbs and my colleague, Andy Dawson. Andy's not on video. I'm not sure what's going on. He's on vacation today, but he was kind enough to jump onto this call. We're really excited about you guys. We're really excited about the Groveland community. We've gotten to know a lot more about your community and some of the pretty terrific initiatives that you guys have been working on for a number of years. And we're very pleased to have a role to help you guys advance those things moving forward. I could offer just a little bit more about kind of us and our firm. We're WRT, we're a landscape architecture and a planning and an urban design practice. I'm based here in San Francisco. We also are in Philadelphia. We work across the country, but you know, my work and the work of the San Francisco office is, you know, very focused around California, from San Diego up into the Redwoods and Mendocino. We just finished a really, and we're actually still working with the town of Mariposa, and really it's a project that's about positioning that community for a future success in the context of changes at Yosemite, and understanding those intrinsic values of a foothill community, of a gateway community, and solving for the residents that are there and solving for the great needs that are there, but leveraging some of the changes associated with Yosemite in the future. And so I think it's given us some insights as to just some of the uniqueness of a community such as yours. And you guys now we're learning about all the interesting initiatives you guys have going on within your parks, and how to revamp those parks, how to tap into recreational amenities within your town, opportunities for trails. And I think those are things that are going to be so awesome for your community. And I think they're also going to be beneficial as you guys position yourselves within gateway community economics, making your town a really great destination. And great destination towns are great because they already work for residents. You know, it's not about tourists. It's making them work for your families, your kids, your communities. And when those things happen, it's also great for you know, folks from the outside that want to stop and visit. So we're kind of tuned into all those things and really excited about the strength of your staff team, and really great to meet all of you here on this call. So I would stop there. If there's any more specific questions or things that I can more specifically talk about, just, you know, happy to.
And hey, this is Andy. Sorry, I'm not on video. I'm doing my best to call in here, but I just wanted to say hello and just say that I'm very excited and looking forward to getting to know you all more as we move ahead.
Thanks, Andy. So happy to share a little more if or whatever you guys would like, but glad to be here.
I'm going to unmute here. I think, John, appreciate it. If any questions come up, we can direct them your way, but I'll, if you don't mind, I'll move this back to the board. Janice, as far as the proposal goes, this is pretty much a phase one, the way that we have it budgeted. We don't have a lot of money in the park budget to begin with, but this is the entire amount that we allocated for this budget year to do this planning to prepare ourselves for bigger things. So the recommendation is that we move forward with this agreement with WRT, and any additions to this scope of work, because again, this is an initial scope, and then there will be more detailed review of certain aspects of the project. For example, the trail might take additional detailed review to provide some linkages and to make the project more attractive for grant funding. There may be more detailed feasibility evaluation of the RV park campground that we're proposing to link in with the whole thing. This initial step looks at it from a pretty high level as far as whether it fits, whether it's a need and opportunity, how it all could tie in together. And so again, we'll be back to the board on this as we get further along. I just want to let you know as well that I've looked at an application process through the Sierra Nevada Conservancy. They've got an open designated program. They are actually funding in advance the cost of the study work in preparation for vibrant recreation and tourism related activities. It's an ongoing grant that they have for the next year. And they are receiving applications continuously. I think I sent John and Andy, I sent you the link to that, but in the beginning I thought it was actually a construction component, but it's not. It's really, it could take our initial look at this and drill down to the right degree to get the right graphics and right information on the priority components of the project. So I think that'll be one of the first things that we work on our end to help complement this and move it along.
That's great. That's really good. It's nice to be able to apply for something that we're looking into right now. So good for that. Thanks, Pete.
Yep.
So I want to move.
I'll just remark that this was a really good proposal, I thought, and I'd also like to salute Spence and Jen for and the rest of the committee for if you had seven of them that were like this to review, that was a major lot of work going through all that stuff.
There was
so
one,
thanks for doing that.
There was one that was $98,000, so we didn't look too much into that one.
Sometimes they self-limit themselves. Said, I mean, based on this is a good looking proposal, so I'll move to approve resolution 45-2020, awarding a consulting services contract to WRT Engineering for the preparation of a park amenities study and plan.
I'll second that.
Thank you, gentlemen. Okay, do we have any other comments from any of their directors? Yes, Spencer?
Yeah, I'd like to present the way that we conducted this selection process and the way that the committee and the district staff worked together to come up with our selection as a model for future committee actions. We all worked real hard at making this selection and it came out really great. I'm just really psyched about the whole thing and the company that's been selected, and I'm really looking forward to what happens next. But this was a model for how committees and the district should work together. Of course, this is my opinion, but it really worked out well, and it was not easy. It was not easy. And thank you, Bob and John, for making the motion and seconding it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any public comments regarding this action this morning? Jennifer? Nothing coming in? Mm-mm. Okay, call for the vote, please.
Okay. It's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Armstrong to approve resolution 45-2020, awarding a consulting services contract to WRT Engineering for the preparation of a park amenities study and plan. We'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
And the motion carries unanimously.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations, John and Andrew.
Yes, guys.
If I could just add, it's great to see all of your faces, and there's nothing like visiting in person, and Andy and I can't wait for that opportunity. I see some really beautiful scenery behind many of you as you're outside, or I can see through your window. And we're just looking forward to getting our feet on your ground, so to speak, and hopefully be able to meet a lot of you guys in some safe way outside and hear more about your visions and your goals for your community. So we're happy to be working with you guys.
Thank you, John. Mm-hmm. Okay. We will move on to item 7B. And that is, I'm sorry, 6B. Discussion. This is discussion regarding modifying the Groveland Amador Station contract with CAL FIRE. Is this a Pete or is this a?
I'm going to jump in right here as soon as I get myself unmuted. This is an informational only item, and the purpose of this is just to have some advanced discussion regarding us moving into discussions of modifying our contract with CAL FIRE. And this is resulting from an action that was taken by the County Board of Supervisors recently. I included the staff memo for your consideration. And this was something that I know Tracy, County Administrator Tracy Riggs has been working on like crazy. This was an 11th hour before the meeting, probably all nighter to get these things together. So we want to extend appreciation also to the county staff for really moving these items. And we've got, it looks like a couple of folks from the county here as well. But the right now we are, we joined in with the county back when our department, our staff department dissolved back in 2012. The county had an agreement with CAL FIRE. We went in, joined in with them on that. And then recently on the second update of that contract, we separated out where the county has its own contract and we have our own contract with CAL FIRE under the same terms and conditions. And then moving through the discussions that we've had very cooperatively with the county, Tracy and the county board has moved forward this initiative to modify the CAL FIRE contract. And what would happen there is the county is proposing to assume the responsibility for the payment of the Amador agreement. And then the district's contract would be amended to remove that responsibility. That is a benefit to the community. And John, I'm glad you're here, John Armstrong, to hear the discussion because you were sidelined for the last discussion. Sorry about that. But we have had very, very productive conversations with the county, and it's been really, really difficult as we're trying to push forward on all fronts here. Again, it's been very cooperative. The next step will be bringing an agreement back to you. And before Tracy and Mo have to leave, if there was anything that you folks wanted to add to the discussion, I think it's appropriate to do it now.
Thank you. And we appreciate the time to participate in your meeting. So I think it was about a year ago, maybe probably more now, maybe closer to two, when Pete had done a presentation to your board regarding the fiscal stability of really sustaining the level of fire services that you have now. And, you know, I took that very seriously. We've been looking at ways that we can change and support services along that corridor. And I've been learning a lot about fire services or lack thereof in the corridor around Highway 120. John Gray's been doing a lot of work, giving me some history lessons. So with that being said, what we had been working on was how can we support the district right now as we continue looking at a fire parcel tax. We talk about maybe formation of like these community facilities districts or additional developments that will assist in revenues as we move forward. This is a way that the board felt that they could demonstrate that they hear what your board and the community is saying and they understand it, and we're trying to take some action to at least begin right now. So if your board were to approve and be agreeable to modifying these agreements, this would be something that could help you this fiscal year and not waiting future fiscal years when these developments might actually be built and moving forward. So I'm hoping that you would consider this and be agreeable to it. The board has agreed to do it again this fiscal year. And working with Andy and Nick, they seem to feel that we could get this done even as we're working now to make the date for the entire fiscal year. And we all know it changes when we have to pay for these types of stations. Depends on our fire year. Lately, it seems like that fire season is going longer and longer. But I'm happy to answer any questions and appreciate the time to talk with you.
Well, I don't have a question. I'm just going to say thank you for pushing this through and keeping it in front of the Board of Supervisors. So, you know, short term, it's a really big impact for us. So thanks.
Absolutely.
I agree. It's we appreciate that. It's a little overdue, but it's good. Good to have it coming in. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. And your support is very appreciated. It's important that the fire service stretches up there and takes care of those people. But I'm really happy to see this because our community gets impacted very much by all these. So thank you, Tracy.
Absolutely.
I see Spence wants to be recognized.
If I may add, thank you and chime in with Bob and John and saying thank you to Tracy Riggs. I know it's difficult. Sometimes it's difficult to work within GCSD. I bet you that's 10 times as difficult to work through a county board of supervisors. Well done. Thank you. As a former firefighter at the Groveland Fire Department, volunteer, paid call firefighter, engineer, EMT, thank you. We need that fire department, and it's part of Groveland. I mean, you drive through town, and there's this magnificent fire department. It's always been magnificent since 1985 when I moved up here. Thank you.
So that just to put some context to it, it was a $263,000 budget item for this fiscal year. We initially, in the first couple years of this contract with Cal Fire, we were lucky but not lucky to have a continuous drought, and so the state fire season extended. So there were no payments initially in the first couple years for the Amador agreement because the state funded the station. And that all changed a couple years back. We came out of the drought. We had a fire fire season that was actually called by the state, and so a non-fire season. So we actually had to pay it for the first time. And since that time, we've been going negative in our fund balance because we just don't have the money to do it. So it gives us more time. The thing that's really important about this is, I think the first graph I showed you, Tracy, in a meeting showed this terrible downward trend without any words behind it. And from then on, it's been as fast as we can get this resolved. But that flattens that curve, not to use a current statement, but it flattens the curve out so that we've got more years to be able to refine this and make the whole thing whole. So appreciate it. So if this will come back to Andy Murphy, I see you're on the line. Do you have any idea what the timeline would be for the agreement? No commitments at this point.
Yeah, we'll have it at the next board meeting in November.
Wonderful. I have a quick question. Did this also, I believe I heard at the last meeting that the Amador, that the Merrill Street station would also take all first calls for out of district. Is that correct?
We generally work on the closest resource concept, although depending on the type of call and location, the Merrill Street, the Cal Fire year round is first out for some of those outlying areas.
Okay. Go ahead, John.
Quick question, Tracy. I know you're kind of in the board's ear. Are they going to start maybe charging these people that want to come in and build these resorts and do all this stuff for infrastructure and stuff like that? And I mean, most places I've ever worked and stuff like that, that's what it was about that. I mean, you have to charge those people to have them pay their share. And I'm just wondering if the board is going to start rethinking their way of doing business with these people.
So yes, actually I was just talking, Pete and I had a meeting yesterday afternoon, and he was very convincing. So I've already started some conversations individually with board members. It's bigger than just Groveland, right? They need to talk about a policy issue overall about developments countywide. And that's kind of where I arrived. At first, you know, I will tell you, and Pete could tell you, I'm very sensitive when we start talking about additional taxes and assessments on private sector businesses. But on the same instance, we know that people are demanding more and more services, and the revenues don't keep with it. So we can talk with them individually, and I've already had a few. After my conversation with Pete, I thought about it last night, and I've been telling them, we need to have a conversation about this idea policy-wise countywide. And they're receptive to the conversation. And then, you know, we talk about fair share. We have to determine fair share of what, and that's what Pete and I talked about yesterday. One of the things that Pete, what is that you talked about, a deployment study or something where we set that baseline that we're trying to strive towards, which we know we don't have. So that'll be another conversation. You know, the board is really sensitive. You may have heard some of their comments if you've watched about doing any additional plans or studies. They don't want to spend another $200,000 on a plan that's ineffective and not useful. And so I think, you know, we need to have that conversation again. There's more than just that one, but determining fair share, determining what is that baseline or standard that we're trying to get to. And then we have something to work towards, at least. You know, we won't get there overnight. But yes, I am planning. I've already had them beginning this morning. I've already spoke to several, and I will continue that. It may be part of the conversation when we talk about the parcel tax moving forward, is we're talking about overall revenues for first responders, because it's not just fire. It's also how do we get more law enforcement in the core up in Groveland, and that's important to me as well, and I know it's important to the sheriff, and I've talked a lot about that a lot. So yes, we're getting there. I am still learning, so when it comes to development, you know, I can do numbers and accounting all day long, but I'm learning a lot. So when I, you know, work with Pete and work with our development director, just know that my knowledge is only about an inch deep, but really, really wide. So I'm trying to get a little bit deeper without getting into too much of the details and getting in way of our department heads who are doing a fantastic job. So always open to hear. So know that if you guys have ideas, shoot them my way. I at least listen to them. And like with Pete, you know, I was like, I don't know, I don't think I can support this. But I do support it more as a policy decision countywide and as we move forward for all development, no matter where it's at.
Thank you, Tracy. Yes. Cohesiveness throughout the county would be nice. We don't need any more. Well, if Twain Hart has it, or, you know, Columbia has it. Okay. So this was just a information item. Does any other directors have anything else they'd like to say on this? I know we're tickled to death to have the Amador contract taken over by the county. That just makes a big sense of ease. Take a breath now for Pete and the staff when it comes to balancing the budget. So we, with no comments, Jennifer, were there any comments from the public?
No.
Okay, then we will move on to item 6C.
Are we ready to jump in?
You betcha.
Okay, this is we're going to lose some of the folks from the county, and understandable. They've put a lot of time and effort into all of this across the board, every aspect of this issue. And when we start to have three items related to fire and the county on the agenda, it's a lot of work on their part to participate. So we really appreciate that. And this is another potential area that would take quite a bit of coordination and communication with the county. And we've discussed this a little bit in our past conversations at the board about the potential formation of a community facilities district. I linked the guidance booklet on community facilities districts in the staff report. It's lengthy, it's technical, it's somewhat complicated, but it does tell a very good story about how they're formed, what they're used for, limitations, and some of the other aspects. But the bottom line of it is that the amount of revenue that we receive and would receive in the future from projects does not cover the ad valorem tax alone, which is based on the property value. That amount of money alone does not cover the services, the cost of providing the services. And that's been that graph of ad valorem tax and expenses has been out of whack pretty much since Prop 13 started it, set the course in motion. Prop 218 has changed it drastically. There have been other things as well. But when you've got a situation where when land develops and you've got a facility, for example, that might have 150 lodging units that we all benefit from because it brings people in, it makes our stores stronger, it makes our downtown businesses stronger. You've got employment, you've got revenue generation for the county and other services, and revenue generation for the district and more customers. However, water and sewer that we provide are covered by the fees that we charge. We do studies, we set rates, we go through those actions to make sure that those budgets balance and think about the future. With fire, right now we're fixed. We have just the ad valorem tax, and when a project comes in again, we're losing money. It provides more effort on the part of, for example, the fire department to respond to a project, like even inside the district boundaries, that, and it puts more stress on the department that needs to plan for the future in having additional staffing and additional equipment to make sure that if our calls go up by 25%, 30%, 40%, 50%, that we have the ability to be able to keep the level of service the same. Community Facilities District has been around. It is the Mello-Roos Community Facilities Act that's contained in the government code. And the formation of these districts is not it's not a new district. It's not a separate board. It's purely the identification of a boundary, and then the current and, you know, the formation boundary, and then a future boundary, and the cost of the services to be provided. So there has to be a specific financial evaluation done to determine the level of tax. There's very specific consulting work that needs to be done to determine what that level of Mello-Roos tax would be. And so what I'm proposing here is that the district enter into a period of time where we take certain actions, and that would be to begin the formation of a community facilities district. I've got a couple of models from other special districts that have recently done this. One that has all of the detailed information in place and is just starting to receive revenue now was formed in Templeton, California in 2017. Basically that district used its existing parcel, one of its existing parcels, as the formation parcel. Two directors on the board introduced a resolution petition to form the community facilities district on that district parcel. And then they identified the annexation area as all of the other properties within the district boundaries. Okay. The Mello-Roos or community facilities district tax is only applicable to those properties that are in, that have annexed in as part of this community facilities district boundary. So in other words, the district parcel sitting there by itself It does not generate any revenue. And if no one ever annexes into that community facilities district, there will never be any taxes on the tax roll to be levied. Okay. Even though all of the rest of the district is identified as a future annexation area. But for example, and I'm going to use the project that's titled Yonder Yosemite as an example, they are proposing a fairly significant number of lodging units. It's a resort area with some other amenities. And under the formation of this community facilities district, as they go through this process of getting their entitlement to build that facility through the county's process, annexation into the Groveland CSD Community Facilities District would be required. So then let's just say that's the first one that comes in. The district, the CFD would then be the district parcel. And this property or properties along the highway there between Groveland and Big Oak Flat. As additional projects came forward through the county discretionary planning process, they would, as a condition of their permitting, their approval through the county, their entitlement to develop, they would be required to annex also into this community facilities district to receive our services. It's not, you know, in our case, you've got to look at the number of properties that stand to be developed in the future. The SCAR let's not call it SCAR. Let's call it Yonder Yosemite from now on. The proposal there is a good example of a place where there could be fairly dense development. There are a lot of additional properties that have been identified that could be developed in the future, both commercial and potential parcel maps or subdivisions. This community facilities district would also apply to those as they went through the process. They would have to annex in. For example, the Airport Estates project that we're in the process of annexing and we're going to provide them service outside the district boundaries for now. As a condition of their receiving service and annexing into the district, they would also have been required to annex into this community facilities district and pay that CFD tax. We can't apply this CFD tax and the annexation requirement to a project that's already been entitled. So there may be some projects that already have been through the discretionary process with the county that already are ready to go. They got their, you know, they got their ticket and they're ready to jump in and develop. And for those, we would not be able to levy this tax as a condition of approval. So it's only going forward, but it stops the bleeding that we're having with new development not being able to cover its operating cost. So that was a lot to spew out there. What I'm looking for is direction in support of formation, and then the next steps would be working with the county, the community development department, county administrator, to iron out the process of getting the policies amended at the county as needed to be able to require this as part of the development process in Groveland, only in the GCSD boundaries. And then at the same time, simultaneously, we would be taking actions to form the district. So there would be a certain amount of legal cost, and there would also be some consultant cost. And I would go out with a request for proposals to understand that scope of work and cost for the consulting work to do this. But again, this is, I'm also proposing fire and park services because we have no funding source for park either. So this financial evaluation would look at, is there an impact to park with new development?
So these new new things that would be coming into town that are not residential pay their regular property tax, which we'll get a portion of. Then they will pay whatever the Melrose tax is, which we will get 100% of, correct?
Correct.
And then how do we figure out how much Melrose tax? Because in some areas, like in Elk Grove, they do that for the parks.
They do.
And the schools. And it's a flat fee for every resident in town. And they've got beautiful parks and wonderful schools. So, but how does this type of fee work when it's non-residential?
It is non-residential is one component, but it would apply to residential subdivisions and residential parcel maps, which are less than, I think it's five is the, if you do a parcel map, you split your property into five pieces. And if it's a subdivision, it's more than that. But those are, you know, that's the residential side. Mm-hmm. If someone splits a property to make them two separate individual entities to be able to sell the property in that way, that would go through a county process. And commercial development, for example, this project that we're talking about would go through the process and the tax would apply.
Okay, so those are for within within boundaries.
Right. Let me address the real quick your question about how we would apply it. If, for example, in the case of the there's a specific name for this evaluation. It's a method and an application of the property tax. There's a report that has to be done that has to meet certain requirements. Everything will be based on a residential unit equivalent or a cost per square foot. So there will be a schedule that is adopted by the board as part of this Melrose tax. So let's just say it's 50 cents a square foot for industrial or lodging facilities. And I'm just throwing that out there. That's not a real number, but so it would be based on what they applied for on a square foot basis for that use, you know, what went through the county planning process. If it's splitting the properties into, you know, one property into four, then ultimately they would pay four times the residential rate. You know, each property would pay its Melrose CFD assess or tax going forward. So it's a methodology that we haven't come up with yet. I mean, that's why we hire the consultant, is to follow the laws related to this type of tax. And they work directly with our attorney to make sure that everything's clean and legal and ready to go.
Okay. And for projects that are outside the district?
For projects that are outside the district, we have no ability to affect that in this way. We can't annex them in unless they are annexing into the district boundaries.
Okay.
So for example, like I said, with Airport Estates, they're annexing into the district boundaries. They would annex into the community facilities district boundaries as well. It could serve this evaluation that we do for this could serve as the basis for discussions. For example, if the county was to consider going forward with a community facilities district, our evaluation inside the district of the impact on services and the cost might be applicable to some degree and reduce the effort and cost for the county outside. But we can't, it's the county that has to form it outside.
Okay, so what would Terra V Lodge and Yosemite Under the Stars, or whatever it's called,
Canvas.
Yeah, where would they fall into to support our?
That's a separate matter. This is what we Tracy touched on it briefly. And we've talked about it in nearly every conversation with between Tracy Riggs and myself and some of the other county staff, as well as county council and the community development director, talked about the county forming a community facilities district. And there's been, like Tracy said, there's been resistance because of kind of the overall mindset that a new tax is bad. There's also been thoughts that a new tax might inhibit future development. You know, in this case, you know, I think my thoughts are, I'm a very much a supporter of the people's right to vote on taxes and you know, and very smart taxation. In this case, it's not smart if we don't think about the future. But at the same time, that's what I've been trying to have a conversation with the county about is going forward. We're always going to be in this unbalanced situation where the cost of providing the service is not going to be covered by property taxes alone, by the ad valorem tax. And so we're putting a burden on future generations. So the only thing I can tell you with the county is that we're continuing to work through the process. And the message that I got this morning from Tracy leads me to believe that they may want to have a discussion before the Board of Supervisors for them to understand how this would apply and how it would be used to fund the future fire services and potentially even law enforcement and other services.
Okay. Yes, Spencer.
How does this affect the area between our district boundaries and our sphere of influence? We certainly respond out there for fires and medical aids and things of that nature. How does this affect that area?
You know, it's a really good question, Spencer. It tells me that everybody's getting it here, what we're talking about. The district really only has the ability to be able to affect a tax within the district boundaries. In the potential annexation area, because of the nature of the sphere of influence, this is subject to legal review by our legal counsel, but the recommendation would be that the future annexation area would include the boundaries between our district and the sphere of influence as well, because it's identified for that reason, for if it does develop, that it would likely need services from the district. So it's a legal thing, but my recommendation would be that if we can include it, we do.
Thank you, sir.
I was going to ask a related question, but which was basically to say, what's the prospect that we might be able to annex the automatic aid area? I mean, this is a case where people are getting a benefit and not paying anything for it. And, you know, we have actually touched around the edges in past in terms of trying to balance the fire budget of possibly dropping out of the automatic aid agreement.
Right.
So when we're looking at these alternatives, I guess the county would have to take an action on that because it's outside the district boundaries now. But while you're looking at it, that would be the sphere of influence would be a good thing, but you know, I really would like to think about the I realize they'd have to vote on it. And if the alternative was us dropping out of the automatic aid agreement, I hate to be, you know, hardcore about it, but you know, the people are getting benefit that are not.
Right. Agreed. No doubt. It's I've been looking closely at that and, you know, primarily from the perspective of fire services, because park is an unknown right now, how that impact evaluation would come out. But when you look at the fire responses in the sphere of influence, and I'm gonna do something real quick just for the sake of our discussion here, if you don't mind. I'm gonna take the parcels out. I'm gonna share my screen real quick, if that is okay. Oh, it's disabled. So Jen, when you get a chance, if you can enable screen sharing, I want to just look at the number, because there is a significant number of calls in that area outside the district boundaries. But you're right, it would require either a petition, an annexation petition from property owners out there, that would really be the traditional way that would occur. So anyway, there it's a long road. It's definitely a good thought, because including them into the CFD as a potential annexation area, and then looking at the general plan and projects that have been approved and all of that. There hasn't been a lot of activity out there. The places that are creating a call demand are already developed. It seems like, and so the tax wouldn't apply to them unless it was a voter-approved special tax.
Pete, you should have permission to share.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Okay.
All right. So can you see the district boundaries and sphere of influence?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to put on the fire department calls, and that way you can see where they land. I'm going to turn that one boundary off. Okay. So when you look, it doesn't look like a huge amount of dots in this particular area, but when you actually, you got to understand that a lot of these are multiple calls to the same address. Mm-hmm. So when you pull up a report on the numbers there, 16, 2016, 8 calls, 2017, 18 calls, 14 calls in 2018, and 12 and 19. And many you can see are Friday Road, Prospect Heights. Those are pretty standard addresses for responding. So it is a demand. It's not huge, but also, when you look out a little bit further, you got a significant number out there. You double and triple those numbers, mm-hmm. by going out just outside the district boundaries. So this is something that in the municipal service review, can I turn the screen sharing off now?
Sure.
Okay. All right. As we do the municipal service review, which we're in the middle of now, we'll have discussions about this. We can't just go out and annex areas just because we're providing them fire service under mutual aid, automatic aid. But we can certainly have the conversation about what the future looks like in that regard, Bob. So it's good questions. We're thinking about it.
Well, I think it kind of all boils down to what GCSD is paying for and the county is not. So if we could come up with a way to include them in our areas to receive our services, or to exclude them from our areas but be reimbursed for our services. I mean, that's the problem we've always had.
That's a really good way to summarize that. that issue. And that's kind of where we're moving now, because in many cases, annexation is really complex. It can be controversial, and these folks may not ever need to receive any other service than what they're receiving now. But if there are some major planning projects on the horizon that are going to need services, then it might be good to look at amendments to that sphere of influence, and also potential policies for annexation for services. And if not, like you just said, if they had a community facilities district in place, a requirement that when they, you know, create a, you know, backcountry lodge with zip lines and you're sending people through the air and across canyons, that there might be funding funneled into the fire department to support that responses. And there are a couple projects that are right outside the district boundaries right now that we don't have any say over, but we're going to provide services because we're the only ones here.
Did anybody else see that, real quick, sorry, Spence, see that notice about the Hell's Hollow up, is that what it's called, up the road toward Yosemite that's already been approved? That's the one I asked you about, Pete. They want to do zip lines, they want to do this, mm-hmm. they want to do, and it's been approved but been on hold for quite a few years. Well, they're coming back to life again. So this is one that's already been approved, so we can't include them in any of the things we're trying to establish now.
I don't know that that's something we'd have to work out in the details of the relationship with the county planning department or their community facility or community development department and the process of entitlement for the projects and our services. So there's some details that have to be worked out there. I don't know whether it would apply to them or not. Not this one, not the one that we're proposing, because it's inside of our boundaries. But
right, okay. Yes, Spence. Sorry.
Yeah, I have a question, and this is for Pete. And please correct me if I'm wrong. In the sphere of influence, outside of our boundaries, but inside of our sphere of influence, those people are paying for fire service from Tuolumne County and not getting it. Is that correct?
There's nothing specific for payment for fire services. They pay their ad valorem property taxes that like everybody pays, and then that's then funneled out through a formula to every entity that got that money before Prop 13.
Are we included as one of those entities?
No, because it's not within our district boundaries.
Okay. So in essence, those people are paying their taxes and it's going to Tuolumne County. And then the people inside GCSD are paying their taxes, and some of that through the formula you mentioned is coming back to GCSD. We provide fire services parks with the ad valorem tax, but we also respond to that area in the sphere of influence. So aren't they paying for something and not, and there's no Tuolumne County Fire Department between Chinese Camp or Jimtown and the park boundary, so they're paying for something and not getting it. And our community service district is not getting paid and providing it. Am I correct in thinking of it in simple, or is that an oversimplification?
That's pretty simple. It's in theory, it is correct. In our conversations with county staff, you know, there is a mutually beneficial relationship here as well. There is, like we had in our master plan, there are a number of services that are provided with that money that are a benefit to not only GCSD Fire, but to other fire agencies in the county. So you know, just like with the TOT, and I know that's a subject of future discussion, but when the county is healthy and flush with TOT money, that gives them more discretion to put that back into services, possibly through some type of an arrangement with our district in some way, or whatever else the services are. So yeah, you're correct, but then I don't want to look at it and just say they're paying the county and we're not getting anything for it.
Okay. Thank you.
Andy, were you going to add? I saw you come off mute there.
I did. I would. Thank you very much, Pete. So I just wanted to clarify a few things. So yes, the residents outside of the district or throughout the whole county do pay through their ad valorem taxes. And a very small portion of that in the county area goes to the fire department. And with that, they do receive services from the county. There is some value, first of all, through the agreements that we have, as you've touched on, with Groveland Community Service District and all of the other fire departments in the county where we all rely on each other. Groveland District provides a first-in Type 1 structural fire engine to the areas that we've been talking about. And the backup to that is the Jamestown Station. That's for fires within the district or out of the district. That Jamestown engine is a second engine. And like I said, no department it can operate on its own in Tuolumne County. So the value of that auto aid agreement that Pete had talked about is very valuable to all agencies. There are some additional things that were highlighted in that master plan that the county does provide to the district, and that includes the county pays for funds my position completely, and also does fire inspections, plans review inside the district and outside of the district. That doesn't occur with any other district in the county. Also, as just talked about, and Pete alluded to some of the other things the county provides is the dispatching, which is done for, pays for all of Tuolumne County agencies, and just that continued relationship is vital. As I think Tuolumne County pays for 3.5 positions, which is about 3.5 days worth of coverage in the ECC. And I think that's all I have.
So I think John, you have your hand up a couple of times. Did you have some comments that I missed?
Oh, it was covered. Okay. I had a couple questions, but they were answered.
Okay. So anyway, back to the.
Can I just say one thing? We lost Janice. Jen, can you see if we need to admit her? She's on the phone with me.
She's not in the waiting room for me to admit. So she would need to rejoin.
And thus is the internet service in Groveland, California, just drops you off the map occasionally.
Hey, this is good for me.
Yeah, you're looking good. And Spence is doing well at home, but he also was coming in there, and the district doesn't always have a really consistent internet service, but you guys are bringing it on.
Gosh,
that was good. Welcome back.
Better than what I have at home.
Yeah.
So just bringing this back to specific discussion related to the formation of a community facilities district within the district boundaries, I'm looking for either consensus, motion to proceed, or direction to put this back on another agenda. However you want to proceed. My timing on this is I'm trying to get in advance of the approval of this large project, which it's going to take us a few months to put this together. So I'm just trying to get in advance of that, if it was at all possible.
Mm-hmm. So when you form a CFD, do we have a new? Do we have what is new? What gets added to GCSD?
A funding area boundary.
Okay.
And we've got to produce an annual special tax report. It's a relatively simple thing to do. Mm-hmm. It's basically what money was collected and where it was spent. And then, any other requirements that are in place under the Melrose Act, but it's not a separate board. You don't have to, stop a meeting and reconvene a meeting as the, mm-hmm. as the CFD directors. There's okay. It's just identifying an area, to which this tax would apply.
Okay. That's helpful. Okay. So I would like to, what are we doing here? You're asking for
the motion. I'm sorry. I don't mean to just because this would be just
directional.
A motion to take the actions necessary to establish an annexable community facilities district.
Okay, so I would like to make a motion to just what Pete said.
Take the actions necessary to establish. Annexable community facilities district.
Yes. For financing certain public services within the boundaries of the Groveland Community Service District and direct staff to continue with the steps necessary to facilitate formation.
I'll second that.
Thank you, John. Do we have any questions or comments from the other directors?
Actually, I do have a question. Maybe I just want to, I thought I understood what we were doing and what was going on here, but if we decided, just to take a hypothetical, just the district without the CFD, if we decided to put a special tax measure on the ballot as the district to raise revenue for these services, we would do that. I mean, it might pass, it might fail. It would be a special tax measure. How does having the CFD change that, I guess, is my question. I'm not opposed to doing it. I think I've missed something. I'm not quite understanding. If this is just within the district boundaries, how it is different from what we would just do as ourselves.
Because this would just be for the new projects that come in. Or the new subdivisions that come in, but we don't want to charge everybody in town a new tax. Everybody in town gets to vote on it. It's going to be no. They're not getting any more. You're not getting any more out of it as a homeowner, but a new business down the road that's going to have a 200 facility rooms and zip lines and motor scooters for people to ride up and down the dirt hills. They're going to pay it.
So Bob, for example, with the special tax will be, it's just in the formulation right now, but just assume that it's going to be one rate for developed parcels and another rate for undeveloped parcels. Okay. The undeveloped parcel rate would be half. It might be a 20-acre parcel that's going to pay $75 a year, an undeveloped parcel. If the Community Facilities District were in place, it would pay nothing more for the Community Facilities District unless it developed. And then the rate that would be applied to the tax would be based on the Community Facilities District methodology for that new development, whatever it is on those 20 acres. Maybe it's 20 separate units. It would be the residential rate times 20. There would be a decision at that point whether the special tax still applies to that parcel or not, and whether the Community Facilities District tax to those 20 parcels should be rolled back or not charged or whatever. That's a policy decision. For example, in Templeton, they charge both of them because they just recently had a special tax approved, and they formed their Community Facilities District in 2017. They've had 13 annexations to it. And this was the first year that they actually levied the Community Facilities District tax, because the projects took that long to get through the county process and get a permit to build. And that's when this applied. But they are, at this point, they're going to charge both taxes. It'd be the special tax that was approved by the voters, plus the Melrose tax through the Community Facilities District.
So let me see if I got this. So the thing is, when we start off, we have the district parcel, and when we annex, I don't know, say the Yonder Yosemite or something like that into the Community's Facilities District, we require them to vote for the tax that we're wanting to impose on them.
Yes.
I think, because you can't impose a tax without somebody voting on it, but only that parcel votes, or only the owners of that parcel votes. And we make a condition that they have to do that, or the county won't approve them. So they get hit with the tax only, just them. Correct. And that's okay. I guess I understand that. That's kind of what I thought.
You're absolutely correct. That was a good summary. Again, I'm not speaking from a legal perspective. There may be some legal nuances and procedural nuances that need to be understood and worked out, but in theory, that's the way it's supposed to go.
Do we have any members of the public that wanted to comment? Jennifer, no? Okay. Call the roll, call the order.
Okay, it's been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Armstrong, to take actions necessary to establish an annexable community facilities district for financing certain public services within the boundaries of the Groveland Community Services District, and direct staff to continue with the steps necessary to facilitate formation. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Moore? Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
And the motion carries unanimously.
Thanks, everybody. We'll go to item 6D, consideration of the draft language for a joint powers authority with Tuolumne County Fire Protection Agencies for the purpose of development and implementation of a countywide fire funding measure.
Okay, this is the other side of the equation that we just touched on a little bit. This is a very cooperative effort on the part of the county and the fire agencies, fire districts throughout the county that are looking at forming this joint powers authority. And I see Sarah Carrillo is on the line, or a representative from county council's office. They've been instrumental in working with our legal firm and with the legal counsel for the city of Sonora. The three of us have pretty much shared the financial and legal burden to keep this thing moving forward. Everybody shared their input on the language. And this is the first draft that has been presented. We're all tasked with bringing that to our boards for initial input and understanding. If this were to be approved going forward by the boards that are participating, then there's a process of getting the board for this JPA up and running, having meetings, and ultimately the purpose of it is to issue a or put a measure on the ballot in June of 2021. That would be a countywide ballot for all intents and purposes in the areas where the it would be a the JPA members are listed in this in the document, but then the tax would be on a countywide basis. And so we have support for this. Is a very simple JPA. It doesn't get into a lot of detail that some other fire joint powers authorities do in outlining certain additional services that they're going to provide and things that they're going to do with the JPA vehicle. Because as we talked about before, the county has to, it has to be a joint powers authority or some other countywide vehicle to be able to issue a parcel tax countywide like that. And if it gets too complicated, it gets kind of hard to get some of these districts to participate in it, because it always raises questions. How much money are we putting into this and that and these additional services? How do we get there? So the thought was to keep this simple, basic, and just for the purpose of levying the tax. So I'm open to question. This is the first introduction of it. I've also got the schedule in here of events, presentations to the various boards and approvals that are required. And it's aggressive. Government doesn't move fast, even when it needs to get a tax measure on the ballot. But this outlines where we would need to be to make this a reality for June 2021.
And when would this all have to be done by? March?
Well, if you'd start, I don't have the the packet page number.
The very last page.
But you'll see the fire parcel tax workload and timing process.
Mm-hmm.
What staff and what the legislative bodies would need to do during those time periods of August through February, in establishing the JPA and getting that up and running.
Okay.
The new JPA board would need to be established, and it's basically for each entity that is a member of the JPA. It would be an elected official, or if the elected officials do not want to assign one of their own to this board, then it could be a management staff like myself or a fire chief in another district,
mm-hmm.
just depending on the will of the board. So basically we've got to get the JPA in place first. And I'm just looking for that, the final date, December, during the month of December, entity boards meet to approve the final JPA and appoint the JPA representative. So that's when the big action takes place. Meanwhile, we're working on the development of the tax and the methodology and all those things, and outreach and whatever is necessary to support this thing going forward.
Okay. I'd like to move to approve the initial draft JPA language and direct staff to continue development of the final Tuolumne County Fire Joint Powers Authority agreement to be considered by the board.
I'll second that.
I don't know who got it first.
I've had John.
Okay. Okay.
Do you have any further comments? I saw your hand raised earlier.
I was just going to ask, of course, before we totally go with the JPA, we're going to be able to figure out if they're going to collect enough money to make a difference for Groveland, right? I mean, that's a big part of it to me, is we're going to go with this, is we need to have enough money to do what we need to do in our district.
Yeah, those are conversations I'll have to keep the board apprised on. You know, we've got a lot of discussion coming up. The initial discussion was around $150 per parcel, but there's always pressures, and if at that level, if we did not, setting the community facilities district aside, at that level, we will cover much of the ground, but we won't have we won't be able to expand staffing, under the Schedule A agreement, and we won't have a full equipment replacement program. Those were things that we wanted to accomplish, but we'll have to make a decision at that time. Let's say we choose to go forward with the 150, and let's say we're $50 short in that. I still think it's a responsible thing to do to have all of us pushing for the same measure throughout the county. If it gets rolled back and the group agrees on $75 or something like that, that's not going to get us very far. It could close the door on our ability to be able to go right back out to the voters and get the right amount. So we'll just have to push really hard. I think, we're going to have this on the agenda to talk about the tax component, probably continuously over the next couple months. And so we'll be pushing for that. I think that's reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, that's my biggest concern over going with the entire county is, we go out for this tax and everything, and, we don't get enough money for us. And what are we going to do? I mean, we've got to start putting away for new engines, new equipment and stuff like that. We need to do everything. We're so far behind already with our fire department. It's pitiful. So, I mean, that's my biggest concern.
Okay, well, the tax that the residents of this area would pay would go to this area. We wouldn't get any tax from anybody else. So, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, the only thing I would say, I mean, it's a straightforward JPA agreement, and I think it probably needs to be kept simple, because if you get into details, it'll make it probably not get done in time. But my slight concern, which is kind of related to John's, and which you just alluded to, is the disproportionate, we should have two directors, and probably the county should have two directors. There's more of us than there, there's some pretty, Columbia is pretty small. Jamestown's not very big at all. And they're going to get the same number of votes. So if they get a lot of pressure to keep the proposed rate down, we could easily get outvoted by the small guys. And that would, as you pointed out, that would then put us in a pickle, because we wouldn't be able to come back with another measure of our own.
Very true.
The other thing that concerns me is they just went out for a tax. It got defeated. And it's really hard when you get defeated on one tax to go out for another one within the amount of time that we're doing it. That's concerning for me.
But this is a tax that everybody got to witness recently, a fire tax. I mean, it's got nothing to do with the sales tax and nothing to do with the TOT tax. Everybody in this area got evacuated. We had smoke coming up over the hills for months. So I think I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that it's going to be easier to.
I love living in this county, but when it comes to fire, they don't want to spend the money sometimes. I mean, it's horrible. It's sad, but it's the way it is.
I think Tracy did a good job of explaining that it's a learning experience for everyone. A couple of years ago, this board of supervisors would probably not have supported a tax proposal. They are truly at the core. Through continued efforts like we're going through now, it's an education, and it is like pulling teeth sometimes, but then you get to the point where you start to have, you understand that you have alignment and you can move forward together. And in this case, there is some, not so much the pressure on the $150, but more on the application methodology to certain types of parcels. So, there's going to be discussions, and Bob, I don't know that having a modified structure based on revenue or number of parcels for directors would be able to be supported. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I totally understand.
I'm sorry. I wasn't suggesting you should even ask. I'm just concerned that is a vulnerability. I don't think there's any possible way you'd get, you got to stay simple if you're going to get agreement on the thing by the smaller partners. If they feel like they're getting set up to be outvoted, they won't join. And we don't have a countywide JBA. So I don't think there's much we can do about it. I see that as being a serious defect in the JPA, I'm not going to vote against it because of that. Just right. I think it's going to be, that's kind of the.
Do we have any? We didn't have any members of the public that wanted to speak on this, did we, Jennifer?
Not that I've indicated.
Okay.
You can. I don't know. I've seen Sarah with the county council's office on for a while. I didn't know if she was looking to participate in the discussion or just monitor. But Sarah or whoever is participating on behalf of county council, if you wanted to.
Hi, Pete. Hi, everybody. No, I'm just listening. We're taking this item to our board next week, so I'm just absorbing. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah.
I move to approve.
John, it's already been moved.
you seconded it.
So now we just need to take the vote. Okay, Jennifer.
Since then, though, so I'm going to go ahead and move forward then. It's been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Armstrong, to approve the initial draft JPA language and direct staff to continue development of the final Tuolumne County Fire Joint Powers Authority Agreement to be considered by the board. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously.
I have something I need to add, Janice, if I may. I must leave at 12:55 to pick up two kids from school.
Okay.
So that's 5 minutes before we're supposed to end. I don't know if we will be ended. Second thing is, the last item on the agenda is something that I need to speak about. If you could wiggle that in sooner, I'd certainly appreciate it.
Okay. What time is it now? 12:05. Okay. What do you want to do, Pete? Do you want to just keep going forward and see where we're at?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll see how these next few
items. Sure. Okay. Agenda item 6E, adoption of a resolution authorizing an application for grant funding through the Department of Interior Bureau of Reclamation Water Smart Water and Energy Efficiency Grant Program for fiscal year 2021 for the automatic meter reading installation project. Can I just move to approve it?
And as a former meter reader, I think it's a real good idea.
I'll second it.
Are we pretty sure that these things work now? What I'm thinking back to is, like, I don't know, when I first moved up here, or even before I moved up here, I think didn't LaGrange or somebody spent a whole ton of money putting in automatic mm-hmm. meters, and it just ended up being $300,000 pissed away on nothing.
It was more than $300,000. Yeah, I came in to Don Pedro after, obviously, you know, the manager was sent away. after that, there were, you know, when I say we, the district had just gone out and went to a vendor and bought the equipment and was going to install it themselves, because that's the way that they did things there. Mm-hmm. There were a number of mistakes in that, in not having the study done. We will not contract with anyone. We will not have anyone touch it until somebody puts up a bond or a guarantee saying that this will work. Because I'm still not convinced, but so far our district engineer and the vendors are saying it will. But before we do it, worst case scenario, Bob, we would, if for some reason we couldn't get that guarantee, we would transition to 100% drive-by, you know, so partially automated meter reading. You get the same result, except you just got to put a person out there and you don't get real-time immediate data.
I mean, the concept is great. Everything is terrific, and it allows us to do a lot of stuff that would be good to do. I really want to be looking at testimonials from people that have installed these, you know, large systems, and that they actually work as advertised. And it sounds like you got that covered.
Well, they do in a flat environment. You know, when you're down in Oakdale and Modesto or whatever, and you can bounce off of every cell tower and every high building, and that signal is, you know, clear line of sight everywhere you go, there's 100% guarantee you're going to have good communication all the time, you know. However, in our area, we have snow, we have topography, we have tree cover, we have a lot of things that
the bears.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of ground yet in between us, but that's also why it is a 2,753,000 project to replace meters.
Mm. We have people that park their cars over the top of the meter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Louie could tell you some stories, I'm sure. But this is a program that regularly funds these types of projects. It's only competitive when you make a relatively small ask. In other words, if we went in with the entire amount, it would be rejected. And then they don't say, hey, can you reduce your request? They just reject your application. You don't score well. We feel that looking at the prior applications, that's a reasonable number. And then the remainder of that would be funded, hopefully, through a USDA loan and grant.
Cool. Okay. I move to approve the resolution 46-2020 authorizing an application for grant funding through the Department of Interior Bureau of Reclamation Water Smart Water and Energy Efficiency Grant Program for the fiscal year 2021 for the automatic meter reading installation project.
And I second that motion.
Thank you, sir. Any public comments? Any more director comments? Let's call for the vote.
Moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Edwards to approve Resolution 46-2020, authorizing an application for grant funding through the Department of the Interior Bureau of Reclamation's Water Smart, Water and Energy Efficient Grant Program for fiscal year 2021 for the automatic meter reading installation project. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Enthusiastically, aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously.
Thank you. Okay. Let's see. Item 6F, adoption of a resolution approving a revised and updated district organizational chart to reflect the addition of an information instrumentation system manager position and related personal budget amendment.
Okay, I'm going to introduce this item and go over the content of your packet and then ask for Jennifer and Louie to jump in and fill in gaps and help me out here. This is from the minute that I walked into the district and Louie and Greg's pager and phones never stopped going off. From the very minute that I walked in there, we couldn't even sit in on a meeting because their equipment was alarming them of failures and problems and communication glitches and blah, blah, blah. And there was just really no clear path on how to get some of this stuff dealt with. We had used a variety of contractors for both SCADA work. And when we talk about SCADA, that's the supervisory control equipment that we have at each of our pump sites, each of our lift station sites, each of our tank sites, every treatment plant. Very complicated hardware and software that run those pumps and communicate back to the central office, generate reports and everything. But constant trouble trying to find consultants to work on that, partially because we had never upgraded software. And we had asked the people that were helping us to use the software that they owned to make amendments to our stuff because we didn't want to invest in software upgrades in many cases on certain things that we didn't really even have licenses for. We've got that dealt with, but, and you kind of look for light at the end of the tunnel and say, okay, we're not gonna need assistance on SCADA as much anymore. And we're getting new technology and replacing it in the office for computerized data and everything that we do on a day-to-day basis, but it doesn't ever go away. And those that are know technology know it very well. When you replace staff and replace inefficient processes with specified technology, you gain the ability to be able to reduce your expenses for staff, which is our biggest expense. But at the same time, you increase your cost on the technology side and taking care of it. And we had things really falling apart. We couldn't even find a contractor to come in and take care of email glitches, server glitches. When we got attacked, we had a cyber attack and we lost hundreds of thousands of dollars of engineering data because we didn't have it protected. We didn't know where it was. We didn't know what it was. And internally that just happens when you change staff, when you have staff turnover and not everybody gets the whole program. So what we've been doing over the last 2 years plus is looking at ways to most efficiently move forward because our contracted cost for SCADA improvements and SCADA troubleshooting and control upgrades and office software and hardware upgrades has been increasing significantly. We finally found a contractor that can help us out on both ends. So it's an integrated effort. But as you've seen, the bills are astronomical. So what we did is we took a look at similar agencies to determine who had transitioned into having on-site IT experience, and considering the number of facilities that we have and the level of effort to maintain it, we definitely qualify to have somebody internally, and it does offset the cost. So after the staff submittal, you've got a description from Louis that gives some more information about what this position would do and what costs it would offset. And I'll have them address your questions about that. And then we've got a description of all of the technology that this person would be maintaining. Because it was a discussion about a new position that we were looking at creating, and we needed to know what the cost of that would be, what the market looked like, we had Coffin Associates, who did our classification and compensation study back in 2018. We had them do exactly the same mini study for that single position to see what was out there. And their report is included in this agenda document. They completed a very thorough evaluation of the same comparator agencies, and they have a recommended salary range associated with that, also a job description. And then from that, when you get out of the job description and the salary range component, we've got our salary chart in there and our organizational chart as well. The organizational chart shows where this person would land. Basically, they're a manager position. So in all reality, they're under the general manager in the org chart, but they are being directed and their performance set by the administrative services manager and operations manager. So I think it's, we've had this conversation. I think it's time that we move in this direction, and Jennifer and Louis put all the effort into this and can answer your questions.
I have a question. Is it one person?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Jennifer and Louis, I was curious to the, on the comparison page where it lists the material cost, labor cost, total cost. Those are the two projects that have been completed this year. Did the labor cost include the overtime and travel expense and overtime, travel, and it did?
Yes, it did. Yep.
Okay. So then this figure is incorrect, right? Because if we hire somebody on board to do this, we're not going to have those issues. We're not going to have those expenses.
No, but we're paying them now.
Right. Right. But you can't compare what we would offer to pay somebody to an expense that we wouldn't have if they worked on board. Am I correct?
I think Janice, I don't know if I'm looking at the right spot, but I think he's just showing what a fully loaded position would be, and then just comparing that to the other is the expenses that would go away essentially, that are IT related.
Okay, so where on here would the fully loaded expenses be? I see the fully loaded.
That's the for the
step
position.
One, step five.
Correct. That's okay. Benefits and everything.
So it'd be $139,000 a year to start with.
If they were placed in a step one of the range. So that's the lowest fully loaded step and then the highest fully loaded step.
Okay.
And fully loaded for the terms for the discussion here is all of the personnel related expenses, benefits, taxes, all of that.
Okay.
The question I think, and I can focus Louie and Jen on this, is in that table, let's just look at the step one, the 139,558, okay, of the fully loaded step one, compared to the budgeted amount for computers, maintenance, programming, IT services of 175,000. Okay, that's kind of what we're looking. You're looking at offsetting, not having that full 175,000 in expenses, and you're replacing it with the fully loaded step one, for example. Okay.
Yeah, for the most part.
But those two, what portion of that 175 are we going to spend anyway?
Mm-hmm. It would be the equipment. So like the maintenance, programming, and the services, which is the majority of that, would be eliminated with bringing this position on board. But obviously equipment or anything we would purchase, which is also included in that dollar figure, we would still, it would be an addition.
Okay, do we have an amount of what that is? Sorry, Janice.
For like the upgrade on the whatever program you guys use in the office.
Springbrook?
Springbrook.
Yeah. So yeah. That's an additional expense.
Correct. That's for a subscription to software.
Right, but is that included in the $175,000?
I'm not sure. Louis worked on this memo with Deb. I'd have to look at our actual budget. I want to say it is included with that line item from when we combined services from the previous budget.
Okay.
It is, Jen. Springbrook was taken out of that 175. And that's why that 115 underneath that 175 was year to date for Aqua Sierra. For last fiscal year, and that number is everything that they did to us that this position could do. So that's why that's in there. And the rest of that, we almost hit that mark on the head last year for that 175. But like Jen said, the Springbrook was in there, and a few other things were taken out of that weren't Aqua Sierra related. So
yeah, so as it's like 100,000 of that 175. So like there's about 60,000, a little under 60,000 that's related to software, equipment. That makes sense.
Okay. The recent bills we got from Aqua Sierra included this software, didn't it? The Springbook software, because it was...
No, Springbrook, we contract with them completely separately.
Okay. But the bills that we got from Aqua Sierra were extraordinarily high. And it was when he did the Springbrook upgrades.
It was the server
upgrades.
Server upgrades, yes.
Yeah. And those, the equipment, the servers themselves are really expensive.
Okay, so those were included in that billing. The servers were.
Yes, and the programming and everything to get them prepared to host. Right. Yes.
Okay.
Well, we're just looking at the one that just recently came in for $27,830. That was the OS system upgrade for the server. And that was literally like $2,000 worth of material or parts or equipment and all labor pretty much on the other end of that. So... that was one of the biggest ones did. And we actually just got another bill for the SCADA system, which was last fiscal year as well. But we just got our first initial payment for that, which was another 13,000 and some change. So anyways.
My goodness.
I'm just going to focus back on that one line because I want to make sure that we're speaking clearly. That fiscal year 1920 expenses of 115,389 you're saying that 90% of that is labor. So about 103,000, is that correct on just that?
Yep.
Okay. So basically, take for example, if we had this position on staff paid at that 139,558 entry step range, the difference would be what we spent on labor through a contractor was 103, and what we're would be spending for labor would be 139,558, correct? So we're spending more, but we haven't talked about this was contracted for specific individual purposes, not somebody who's deployed full time.
So yes, this is for scenarios that we needed them for, and updating computers and programs. And but if he is on board, we could use him for a lot more things than just what that 103 has got us.
Right. So, okay. So basically, doing the math, $40,000 is what it costs us in addition to what it would be for contracting for just as needed services to having someone on staff full time, because we paid 103 and we would have been paying 139. So we're paying for example, we're paying about $40,000 more, but we're getting that position full time versus just contracted as needed for maybe one quarter time.
Okay. So my point was, if we paid $103,000 in labor, and then you take that and compare it to you'd have to cut out all the overtime, the travel, all the expenses for him to come down here. And let's say that was $20,000. So now you're down to $83,000 for labor, and compare that to the $139,000. So
I'm not quite sure why we would be backing out the traveling and everything else, because that's part of their labor cost to provide services for us. So I'm not quite understanding why you're backing that
expense. Well, that's for that particular company that would charge from so far away, would charge us all those fees. And overtime, when he shows up on the job and he hasn't started working yet, he's already charging overtime. That's not something you can compare to. You want to take what we have paid him in the past and compare it to what we would pay him if he was an employee, correct?
Correct.
So you wouldn't have all those expenses. You can't compare.
But if we don't have this individual on staff, we're going to be paying that expense constantly. So it is a reoccurring cost for us, because it doesn't matter if it's this company or another company, and they don't hit a lot of overtime on us. They're very good about that. But there is times that a project takes them over, but we do pay for travel and per diem when they're here. But no matter what company it is, they're going to be coming from the Valley, and they're going to charge us travel, and they're going to charge us time for being here. And if they stay, they make us pay for lodging and all that. So that's
right,
just
right
across the board for every company that is out there. So,
okay. So how does this fully loaded step one compare to other management positions within the district?
If you look on the salary range chart, there should be a list of the district's positions that have the highest step there. They are, would be,
what page, Jennifer?
Let me see. It is page
101.
Yes, it would be the third highest paid position at the district. It's the general manager, the ops manager, and then you'd have this IT position.
Ooh, okay. I don't have my page numbers numbered like you guys do, because I didn't go through and reprint it. What's the top of the page say? I'm sorry, I don't want to be so, I just want to get to the page.
If you just see if you get to the salary range chart, so it's the one that has a zillion numbers on it, It's the one right below after that page. It says Groveland Community Services District salary range placement. Pete has it up on the screen.
Oh, there it is. Okay, gotcha. That doesn't belong there. Okay, I see the top.
It's not listed in order of salary. It's just, it's
okay. Okay.
It's actually alphabetical, so it would be moved up higher. I just put it underneath the ops manager position.
Salary range. Okay, informational straw. There we go. Okay, baby.
So, Janice, I think one of the things that you were trying to do before, it looked to me, was to try to estimate what the right salary would be for this position based on what we're paying Aqua Sierra, taking off all of the extra lard.
Yes.
The point is that they're not working for us full time. This person right. would be here and I'm almost certain would be able to find other useful things to do during the period of time they weren't doing the projects that added up to $115,000 or whatever it was last year. Now that, you know, that's, you're taking a little bit of a chance when you do that, because you could also end up with somebody getting so far ahead of the game that they didn't have enough work. But I honestly don't think that's likely to be the case. I'm a big subscriber to the idea that you do in-house the stuff that is crucial and subcontract everything else. But I think that the way life is going with SCADA and automation and, you know, trying to run this rather large set of facilities with a pretty small staff, mm-hmm. that actually the IT position is probably crucial. And that's just my view. And the salary that was set was based on COF doing a comparable study,
right.
which I thought looked like reasonable sense. So we would conceivably end up spending a bit more money, but I think we'd get a lot, you know, we would be getting a lot more out of it if we can get the right person. I mean, there's an issue about whether we can recruit the individual up here.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, Bob. What you're speaking to is, I mean, you make a really good point, is the fact that we're spending about $103,000 for somebody who pops in and out sporadically through the year, and for the 30 whatever thousand dollars more, you're getting somebody who's at the district consistently on a full-time basis. And we definitely know, I mean, and I, specifically a lot for Louis, you know, there's so much IT that's in our field and our operations to keep services going. And there's, I know Louis has a laundry list of things for this person to do in getting, if they were to come on board with the district. And one of the things, you know, we've kind of spoke to a little bit before Pete did, was a lot of this thinking like, okay, we're just going to get all of these things in place and then we're going to be good, which is not realistic. You get all these things in place and that's what the district's done before. And then they sit there and they're not maintained and they're not updated and they don't function. And then we've got to call somebody in to figure out or update something that should have been updated, you know, 8 years prior. And the district, with how much further we're moving forward in making things more automated, really the exposure is more significant as well, because we can't afford for systems to go down at all.
Right. And
then had plenty of frantic moments, both in the office as well as in, you know, the field, where we can't make water because something's not talking correctly to something else. And having a position like this, we wouldn't have that exposure anymore. And we would never, I mean, essentially we wouldn't experience what we have in the past with systems going down and having to wait and hope that they're available to come respond to fix it for us. We've just luckily haven't had any catastrophes so far.
Yeah.
And Jen, you're 100% right with that too. Is like most of our stuff we can put off for them to be available and not have like the emergency call where they come up and it's even more expensive for them to get here on a weekend or something. We've only had that a couple of times where it's happened with some radio communications during the PSPS events. We hadn't come up, but you're right. This gentleman being on staff will limit a lot of that stuff. And if not talking at one of our water plants or the sewer plant, he'll be here to address that in timely manners compared to we'll be up there next Wednesday type stuff. So, yep. And you look too on that security system more with that, but that's another big cost. It's going to be about 20 something thousand, and it's literally like $3,000 in cameras, So, this individual being on staff will be able to do that for his salary and our equipment costs instead of paying some guy who doesn't work for us to, $20,000 to come up and do it. So,
right. Anyway. Okay.
Yeah. And we understand it's definitely a very high paid position, but it's an extremely technical position that they have a ton of responsibility for one, with keeping the district systems functioning and operating, and then, the salary survey with having COF do it, it's kind of what we had to do because every other district position was based off of a certain, criteria that the board set. So it only makes sense that this additional position went through the same type of process for development, mm-hmm. rather than us unilaterally trying to figure out, well, what sounds good or what kind of salary, because we don't know.
Yeah.
So I have a couple of other comments. I've brought at least one of these up before, which is if we go ahead and do this, one of the problems that we have to confront is how do we back this person up? And so when we've talked about it in the past, I think, Pete, you'd advanced the notion that we would possibly create a skill that some of the other employees could add a skill so they would get some sort of a bonus by being able to do some portion of this job. So I'd like to suggest including in the job description backup training, part of what this person that we hire, the IT person we hire, would be responsible for would be, not cloning himself or herself, but offloading some of the fundamental skill stuff so that, for example, when the main guy or gal goes on vacation, that we still have somebody on board that at least knows how to do the rudimentary maintenance things. The other main point I have about this is when you start flagging this job, is we need to be very, very careful about how we do the interviewing. I mean, you're going to need to get some other people in from other agencies that have the skills to be able to interview, because we're only going to have the one person. This has got to be somebody that is really genuinely qualified for the job. I'd see that as it's going to take some care, because there's nobody currently on staff, I don't think, that's really prepared to do the interview properly. I'm not prepared to do the interview properly. I'm too out of touch. But we need to get people on board, get loaners from some place so that we make sure that
we have Bob Asquith.
Yeah, and I think we could probably reach out to CSDA, Listserv, and other public agencies to get some guidance on that. Mm-hmm. But you make a really good point.
Seriously, I think that's a really important thing. We cannot misfire on this hire. This is, otherwise we'll be ending up going back to Aqua Sierra and, not in a good shape.
Very much. That's right there, Bob. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I hope there's a trial period. Are there trial periods, 90 day?
It's probation period, which
yeah,
is
probation. Yeah, okay.
Months probation. It'd good. Be set the same terms as the rest of the employees. And okay. Obviously, it would be, like it states, an exempt position.
Okay.
I move to approve Resolution 47-2020, revised and updated district organizational chart to reflect the addition of informational instrumentation systems manager position and related personnel budget amendment.
I second that motion.
I
That's
just
a very, very important position. I know I have experience at that district with this position, and I second the position.
The small technical point, we don't really have a budget amendment in front of us. We just have an estimate of how much it might cost. It's not a big deal. It's just we're still going to have to have we're going to have to change the.
Yes, we will likely we will do the do it when we do our normal mid-year budget. We'll make sure we're not sure we've been short-staffed for a period of time. It may not take a budget amendment. You know, because if we're low on salaries across the board, then this is going to be a zero impact on the budget. So we'll probably do it in January when we do our mid-year.
Okay.
I mean, it's a budget amendment, and then it's giving us authorization to proceed. Again, that's a good point, good technical point.
Okay. Any other... any public comments, Jennifer? No. Okay. Anyone else here that would like to ask a question, make a comment?
Nancy, you've been really quiet.
Well, I unmuted. I was going to make a point, and then Bob made it, and then I was going to make another point, and it was what Jennifer said, and then Louis filled on again on my next one, so I'm good.
Got all your wishes answered.
I've kind of learned if I just wait long enough, you'll most of the time, and then I just don't have to be, you know, repeating what other people have said. So,
give it this one. If you need it.
Okay, so it's been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Edwards, to approve Resolution 47-2020, a revised and updated district organizational chart to reflect of an information/instrumentation system manager position and related personnel budget amendment. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously.
Okay, item 6G, consideration of a formal district position on the county's Measure U related to the proposed increase in the transition tax, transient occupancy tax. And
let me make sure I'll jump into this one really quickly. We have just for your information, we have Ryan Campbell, Tuolumne County Supervisor, joined us. Reached out to him this morning just because I've heard tales that he's extremely passionate about funding for libraries and other services that are that stand to benefit from Measure U. This was the request of a local group that is very concerned about the impacts on county budgets for continued expense increases and cuts and in services because the funding's just not there, and Measure U is in place for the voters once again to decide whether an increase in transient occupancy tax is justified and needed. And this time around, it seems to be coming forward with a little bit more public support and information that's helping to clarify some of the issues that we saw last time or concerns. And there's been a specific request that our board support or join in with supporting organizations in support of Measure U. And so we can't spend any public money on it. In other words, we can't go out and advocate as a district or, you know, print out a bunch of materials or spend staff time on it, but we can certainly take a position on something like this. And the reason that that this made it to the agenda is that fire has been passionate to us in that we've been very concerned about continued cuts to fire and our expenses and revenue situation. And this is a potential source of revenue for the county to continue fire services and to potentially increase the funding made available to our district for responding. So let's open it up for the, give it back to you, Janice, to get board input.
Okay, did you have something you wanted to read from?
Well, we have there is the request letter that was included in.
Oh yeah.
And then there was also a copy of the op-ed, which has already been published, and I assume they're probably going to publish it again. Mm-hmm. And if they do, and if the board joined on, then our name would be on there as well, in the supporting column. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much about it. There was another email exchange this morning related to this, and I can answer what questions I can, but Ryan's also available, Ryan Campbell.
Okay, so do any directors have any questions regarding this?
Yeah, I do. After reading the agenda, I went and tried to look up, you know, information about public agencies endorsing measures, whatnot. And it looks, I guess it's true that we would technically be able to support it if we didn't spend any money on it. And I was, interestingly enough, if we didn't put our support on our letterhead, which is purchased with public funds. One of the things I noticed from the previous list they have is that there are no entities on here. These are all individuals, which we absolutely could do. I mean, I could, you know, sign on as Bob Swan, board member of GCSD, and there's no conflict at all with people doing that. You're allowed to do that on your own time. Mm-hmm. I'm a little dubious about whether I want us to be the only public entity that does it as a public entity. It just looks a little odd to me when everybody else is doing it. You know, you have presidents and fire chief and whatnot, but it's not, Cal Fire isn't endorsing it. PMLA is not endorsing it. Griefer is endorsing it. I have a little concern with that, I guess.
I thought PMLA was endorsing it and Griefer's just signing it for PMLA as the president. I mean, somebody, you're muted, Bob. You're muted, Bob.
It doesn't say Pine Mountain Lake Association. It says Steve Griefer.
Janice, Ryan is, I think he's got an input, if we don't mind taking
that. Yes, I'm sorry, Ryan, please.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to step on anybody's toes. I'm happy to wait, and if there's a public comment portion, or I can answer some of Bob's concerns right now, if that's appropriate.
Please step on our toes.
Okay, I'll step away. Well, thank you very much, Board President and members of the board. Just quickly going to some of those concerns that you expressed, Bob. My understanding is Pine Mountain Lake Association did endorse it. Cal Fire, Local 2881, which is our representative for Cal Fire, has endorsed it as a group. Also, the Deputy Sheriff's Association, the Yosemite 120 Chamber of Commerce, and then also the Tuolumne County Board of Supervisors voted in support of the measure. So there are a number, and there's actually other agencies that I don't recall right now, and probably some that have come on board within the past few days that I'm not aware of. So you certainly wouldn't be the only public agency endorsing it as a group.
Just going by what was on the list.
And I'm not sure which list. What was it? The letter to the editor.
You know, if we want to, I mean, support it, just put our names in there individually. That's fine with me. I don't care.
I don't have a problem. I don't think there's actually a legal issue with us endorsing it as a group. I just thought it would look a little funny if we were the only ones. I'm looking at what was in our enclosure. You probably, Ryan, you don't have our agenda, I don't suppose, but there was a letter, and then it had a bunch of signatories, and all the signatories appeared to be individuals. I just thought it would be odd if we were the only public entity. But well, if the board isn't, the supervisors have endorsed it, then I got no problem with.
I think I can. Oh, I see. Okay, so I have the op-ed here. So, I didn't write this op-ed, and I wasn't the person that was in charge of writing it. So I don't know why they chose to go with individuals signing it rather than groups. That was a decision that was made, I guess, by the author. But I can tell you that the all of the groups represented here by individuals have endorsed Measure U as a group. That they actually have taken votes to support it. I don't see anything. They might have chosen to sign it as representatives of that group. I'm not sure the decision behind that, but I know that in some of the promotional materials that have been shared on Facebook, that they've been shared as these groups are supporting Measure U and not the actual individuals themselves. So it might have just been the nature of this being a letter to the editor, why they actually signed it as individuals. I'm not sure. The newspaper might have rules that groups can't sign it. I don't know why they chose to do that.
Let's just forget about it and just sign it as individuals. It doesn't matter. It still gets our...
Yeah, but I think they want the support of the district. They can get the support of the individual public members, but that's not as big as being as the district. I mean, we're one of the people that are going to be getting funds from this. It's not costing us anything, which would be against the rule to vote on it as a group. And I know that Pine Mountain Lake is, like Ryan said, Pine Mountain Lake is doing it as a whole, and Tuolumne Trails is doing it as a whole. There's different organizations throughout this area that are doing it as a whole. So I would like to, I mean, we don't have, we're the only entity, government entity in here, so.
Then just do it as a whole. Doesn't matter. I mean, let's just do it.
Yeah. Spencer needs to leave in a minute. I'd like to hear what he wanted to say.
He didn't want to say on this. He wanted to say on the
other thing. I am completely for it. And I do think, like Janice does, that Groveland Community Services District might have a little bit more horsepower when they see it on the names of people supporting it than all of our individual names. Not taking away anything from the directors here, don't misunderstand me, but they see that Groveland Community Services District Board of Directors supports it. I think that might have a little bit more horsepower. And I do have to leave. I have some small children I need to pick up. I apologize. I don't do this very often, but I must leave. So continue on. And when you get to the very final item, if you decide to discuss it, great. Or you could, if you want, you can put it off to the next board meeting. It's something that's near and dear to all of our hearts. I must go.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Okay.
I beg your leave, Janice. May I leave?
Absolutely. Thank you, Spencer. Okay, well, I say go for this, so I'm going to make a motion to it's a recommendation that the board consider the request for support for Measure U and take actions appropriately.
I'll second it.
Thank you. So we can take a vote. Any other take a vote, I guess. No, any other comments or questions?
People are currently voting, so whatever we're going to do, we need to do it quickly.
I mean, so what we're voting for is that the board publicly supports Measure U. Is that, yeah. I mean, I just, we need to actually vote on something as opposed to, is that what?
Yes.
Janice, did you want to amend your motion to reflect that Bob's?
Yes. I'll amend my motion. I would like to make a motion that the GCSD Board of Directors unanimously votes in support of Measure U, and that's it. That's my motion.
John, do you accept the...
I second it.
Okay. So it's been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Armstrong, that the GCSD Board of Directors publicly supports Measure U and take appropriate... Oh, never mind. That was part of the other part. Okay, I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards is absent. Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries with 4 in favor and 1 absent.
Hey, Ryan, I just want to let you know, you guys are my hero for doing this all day long.
Yeah.
It's...
You're my hero, Pete.
What's that?
I said, you're my hero, Pete.
He's all of our hero.
I just thought about you. Yes. I met with Tracy yesterday afternoon and just having a conversation about supervisors and futures and projects and covering everything, you know, services and we kind of commiserate with each other, but she had spoken about your passion related to this. So I woke up thinking about you, you know, so.
Well, I can tell you it's been a while since I've been to a GCSD board meeting, in fact, a number of years, so I'll try not to be as much of a stranger, and I'm really impressed with the board that you have, and I've known Pete for a number of years, and you have a fantastic director, so I'm really looking forward to coordinating with GCSD and between GCSD and the county in as many ways as we can, mm-hmm. and serving the our communities as best as we can. And you guys are really a fantastic organization you have.
And I know that you are not our supervisor, but we support you. You're getting lots of cheers during those meetings.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I support you too. You could all move into my district, but then you wouldn't.
Or you could just move into ours and be ours.
Yeah, we like our supervisor. We like our district supervisor.
We do, yes.
True, yeah. You've already got a good one. He's a short timer, though. So.
Yes, well, a lot of us are.
Is it, if it's okay with the president, I'll chat my contact information into this meeting. And if there are any questions or anybody wants to reach out to me, that will be there?
Yes.
Okay. And then I'm going to hop off if that's all right.
Okay, that's fine.
Yep. Thanks for joining. Ben.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Okay, 6H, adoption of a resolution approving the district pavement rehabilitation project and authorize the general manager to proceed with the public bidding.
We learn every time we do one of these projects. We had we had initially bid this project and rejected the bids because of defects in the bids. And then we delayed in going back out to bid while we made a determination on whether we were going to spend a bunch of money rehabilitating the office to facilitate better workflow, better workspaces, and social distancing requirements for our office staff. And subsequent to that, we chose to go with a remote work schedule and rotating people into the office, which has worked out wonderfully. And we don't have to be as concerned about making immediate improvements to the building, although there are a lot of needs there. But with less people there, there's not as much traffic demand and issues with space. So we would definitely recommend that we move forward with this project. We've chosen a different product that can apply to the existing asphalt, and we've got a number of repair areas where there'll be asphalt removed and replaced with new. So it'll look brand new with new striping when it's done, and it will give us many years of good service, and we will maintain it in the future on schedule and keep from having to replace the entire thing, which will save money. So this would go to bid right away. And it'll come back, if we're within the budget, I will be able to award the contract and bring it back to the board for ratification.
Any questions? Comments? Bob, you're muted. Bob, you're muted.
Sometimes the spacebar works and sometimes the spacebar doesn't work. I would move to adopt Resolution 48-2020 approving the district pavement rehabilitation project and to authorize the general manager to proceed with public bidding.
I will second.
Okay, John, thank you. Any other comments from the board of or public? Yes, Rachel. Oh, don't wave your pen around if you don't want me to call your name.
Sorry, I'm just listening.
I'll just remark that we already approved this project once upon a time.
Yes, we
and
did.
And we had this issue with the bids were a little high and blah, blah, blah. So yeah. Kind of a no-brainer.
Okay.
Which is good.
Okay. Any member of the comment? Comments from the member?
No.
Good. Okay. Let's call the vote.
Okay, it's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Armstrong to adopt Resolution 48-2020, approving the district pavement rehabilitation project and authorize the general manager to proceed with the public, with public bidding. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Moore?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards is absent. Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries, 4 in favor, 1 absent.
Okay, now I have a question. Do we want to go to the reports and then come back to this last item so maybe Spence would be back? Yes? Okay.
I don't think he'll rejoin us, but I think a motion to table it for our next regular meeting or for a workshop would be appropriate.
Okay. Great idea.
You want me to make a motion?
I make a motion that we... move item 6-1 to old business, and we'll take care of it first thing on the next meeting, please, Jennifer.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Can we take a vote?
It's been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Armstrong to table item 6-I to old business at our upcoming November meeting. Now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards is absent. Director Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries, 4 in favor, 1 absent.
Okay, staff reports. Andy Murphy and Travis, welcome, fire department.
Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing us this opportunity to present the Fire Department report. My name is Andy Murphy again, Assistant Chief. And reviewing the report, you can see there were no significant incidents, large-scale significant incidents. Of course, we recognize that every incident is significant for the person or people that are affected. The status of the fleet, all equipment is in service, except for the one new to us used CAL FIRE engine, which has had some other minor fixes to be done for it, but it should be in service shortly. That will be known as engine 783. And as you recall, that's the CAL FIRE surplus engine that we purchased, that the district purchased. Engine 788 enjoyed a long stint of the assistance by hire agreement covering baseline camp for approximately 3 weeks. So that will bring in some nice much needed reimbursement to the budget. Wanted to talk too about grants. So I just got I'll be forwarding the fully executed CAL FIRE volunteer fire assistance grant in the amount of just over $500. It was a 50-50 matching grant. So the total value of the grant is just over $1,000 for some equipment for the firefighters. And also if you remember about this time last year, the district, along with County Fire and Jamestown Fire District, were awarded a little over $500,000 for the purchase of some expiring, or soon to be outdated, actually by the end of this year, self-contained breathing apparatus. And that's a 10% match. I think the district's portion of that was about $8,000 or so. $8,000. So we'll be getting new breathing apparatus to match the CAL FIRE spec. So the guys, when they're covering other stations, it'll be seamless for that life-saving equipment. That allows them, of course, to go into burning buildings and they wear them on in environments that are, what's called immediately dangerous to life or health. The air packs that they wear on their backs. So that's a very good news. Those should be in service on the engine shortly. We just want to make sure everybody has had the training. You'll see in the call run report, there were 51 incidents last month, 48 in the district, 3 in the county. And also looking at the graph, something we're trying to include on the reports is the graph of the last few years comparing the month to the previous year, and we're up 10 calls, so about 25% above last year. And you'll see that there's that trend that's increasing. So far, year to date, we've run 453 calls compared to 432 incidents last year. Other than that, I just wanted to mention, of course, we've all been suffering through the smoke over the last couple of months. It's nice to have some clear blue sky.
Beautiful today.
Amazing. Today, I was off yesterday, but today was the first day in probably 2 months on our morning report. All of our equipment was in quarters, the CAL FIRE equipment. So it's nice to have everybody back home and give them a brief respite. As we know, though, we are under a red flag warning right now for winds and low humidity.
Yeah.
Through the end of the week. Also, good timing on the CAL FIRE side of things again. You may have seen the press release, CAL FIRE, Columbia Air Attack Base, and the Hell Attack Base there is receiving the new Sikorsky S-70i Firehawk helicopter.
Oh, that's cool.
Replacing the Vietnam-era UH-1H helicopter. The current helicopter, the UH-1H, has a capacity of 324 gallons of water. This new, and that's a bucket, the new helicopter has a belly tank that has a capacity of 1,000 gallons of water. And it'll continue to provide the hoist rescue capability, which is used here locally probably at least 10 to 15 times a year for rescues. And it will also have the ability in the future to do night night flying and night water drops. The CAL FIRE is going to, because that's pretty new and it's very dangerous, CAL FIRE is going to be taking steps to implement that throughout the state over the next probably 10 years, I would say. Also, you may have seen the note, Baseline Conservation Camp is going to be depopulated. So as part of the governor's budget, there were eight conservation camps around the state that were being depopulated, as the term CAL FIRE is using. So what that means is all the inmates are leaving and the CDCR staff, but CAL FIRE will maintain a presence there at baseline. That means there's 10 fire captains, a bulldozer and operators and office staff and mechanics. So that will stay there. The state is looking at other options to repopulate the camp, including possibly firefighter ones, CAL FIRE firefighter ones, which we have two crews in the unit now. It could be three Cs, and they're also looking at the possibility of military crews, which are being used more and more each year. And that's the end of my report.
I have a question.
Yes.
Last month's report talked about, it was mentioned that the CAL FIRE was moving from two bodies to three bodies per truck. Is that correct?
Yeah, so funding, what's called, what this is referred to on the state side is the Blue Book, is the budget for CAL FIRE. It lists all the positions. And on the fire engines, CAL FIRE has been increasing that over the last few years. It was, when I started, I think it was 2.6 positions per seat. And now they're up to 3.1 with the goal of moving to 3.5. What that does, that allows sufficient staffing for vacation relief, reducing overtime, and it also helps prevent the 60-day runs that we've been experiencing. So as CAL FIRE's adopted that for the CAL FIRE-funded engines, it's also adopting that for the Schedule A, the new Schedule A agreements, and new engines as they come on.
And how does that affect GCSD?
For the currently staffed engine, it won't affect it. If the district was to add additional staffed engines, or if new agreements came on through other agencies, they would be budgeted out at the three positions per seat.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Any other questions? Yes, John.
I just want to make a comment to Chief. I thought that the stop with the mock fire was incredible. I haven't talked to you since, since I missed last month's meetings. That was just amazing. I fully expected that fire to come into Groveland, at least up to Merrill area, because of the lack of personnel and equipment that you had available. It's just amazing job that you all did. And I just want to say thank you to all the firefighters and everybody for what they did. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Andy, I want to also thank you for your assistance with the weaving through this with the county. Behind the scenes, Andy's been working to do the education as well. You know, the reality check. There's a lot of things that the county didn't understand about the way that things work. We're not experts in everything, you know, and it's always helpful when the experts like Andy and Nick come forward and help explain how things really work.
Yes.
So very, very much appreciated. And the result has been good. And also the fact, do you know how many days the engine was out on assignment?
I would say it was at least 3 weeks. I think it was a little bit more than that. Travis may know for sure.
I mean, it really doesn't matter because once it exceeded about a week, it was paid for. You know, so our initial investment was paid back within a week's time of it working. So that was a good call. So
and the rates went up this year about $400 a day. So it's approximately $2,200 a day for the reimbursement to the district for that piece of equipment.
Wow. I watched you at the county meeting, and I thought you were a rock star when you got up there and said exactly, told the supervisors what you thought we needed to have. It was amazing.
I jumped up
and cheered.
Thank you. Thank you, Pete, too. Sometimes it could be difficult when wearing two hats mm-hmm. or two separate and distinct entities, but it's not difficult when the right thing to do is the right thing to do. And I think the step that the county took funding at our state is a great first step. Mm-hmm. And like Pete mentioned, it buys us a little bit of time, but they are jumping back into the fire protection up there. And that's, of course, vital for the whole system. So applaud the county for taking that step and the CAO for pushing it forward as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chief.
Okay. Can I just add something? This is Travis Chen.
Yes, Travis, please.
I just wanted to mention that our defensible space inspection program has mm-hmm. concluded. That was the grant for $15,000, the California Fire Foundation grant. And as part of that, our inspectors did 1,042 inspections. And just thought that the timing was ironic with the mock fire, just considering that if that fire did come into Groveland with the area evacuated, all of these properties, you know, were mostly inspected and most likely had better defensible space, would have been more prepared for that fire if it would have come into the community.
So can I ask what happens with the 504 that were non-compliant?
So they get re-inspected mm-hmm. and a lot of them were inspected a second time and then they went to a third inspection, and we actually just concluded all those inspections. So anyone that did not pass on the first inspection got a re-inspection, and all of that has occurred already.
Uh-huh. So everybody's okay out there now?
Anything that failed its third inspection gets forwarded on to our prevention department. Mm-hmm. And then they're in a position where, you know, they can find them. Okay. But definitely compliance is the number one priority.
Okay, yes. Okay, thanks for that information, Travis.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
I'm sorry, if I may. That program and that amount, $15,000, really shows you that's one of the that's a definitely bang for the buck value, and especially it was somebody else's buck, was very important for the district and the county overall. It's definitely money well spent and government money well spent.
Yes. Agreed. Okay, thank you, Chief and Travis. We will move on to the General Manager's report.
Make sure I'm unmuted. Okay, I see now when I looked at the packet that all I did was plop in the county's or plop in the memo and did not have my cover document that explained why it was there. And I'm sorry about that. I did the last minute pull together of this item and I missed that. But anyway, the attached to that particular item is the basically the letter of agreement from the county that allows us to be able to provide water service to the Airport Estates 8 lots. while they are in the process of completing the annexation. We have plans and specifications that will be approved by the end of the day today. Basically, they're just installing service connections onto the existing main and setting meter boxes on each lot so that the water lines are ready for those customers to connect to, pull their building permit, build, and become customers of the district. Once they're annexed, then we will also receive an amount of property tax from each of those improved parcels. So there's good things on the horizon there. And so I just wanted to include that the county worked through that one quickly too. They don't normally approve out of area agreements unless there's some type of a reason. And
Are we getting the tennis courts annexed in at the same time?
We've addressed that in the municipal service review font. So that's another process that we'll be talking more about.
Okay.
The municipal service review will probably have a recommendation that property be annexed, as well as the district property where we have our wastewater treatment ponds and the ball fields that are not in the district boundaries. So anyway, we'll get those fixed up. And then the county wants us to continue to review the possibility of taking on the lighting district too. So those are all in the works as we have time. I wanted to add a couple of quick things. One is that as of yesterday, the state released its request for proposals for the community power resilience allocation to special districts. So if you remember last year, the state in its budget had money for cities and counties to address impacts because of PG&E PSPS, the power shutdown. And yeah. Ronnie, you and I had a lengthy conversation about how frustrated I was that the state did that all the time and completely forgets about districts being the ones that provide the services. And so we immediately went to work through the state association and got, you know, so there's the, I don't remember if it was 20 million or 50 million. Some good number is in the budget for the state. And yesterday they released the guidelines on how to access that. So we will be submitting an application for the maximum, which is 300,000. It's 100% grant. It is in the state budget, so it's not a separate weird thing. But applications are due on the 30th of October.
Oh.
Came out yesterday, and they're due on the 30th of October. It's going to take a pretty good effort. I've got Alfonso working on it, and our staff will pull some of it together too. But this is for replacement of, I think Louie talked about, we may be able to get in 6 or 8 generators. So we'll almost have a completely new fleet by the time we're done with the county money that we got, the IRWIMP money, the 100-some-odd thousands that we're investing, and this $300,000 grant from OES if we're successful. Wow. So we'll see. We'll hope for the best. We push for it. Hopefully we'll get it. It is competitive though. So we have to have a competitive application. And so we're going to have to craft it that way. I kind of hit you sideways with the Vibrant Recreation and Tourism Planning Grant through the Sierra Nevada Conservancy. When we were talking about the WRT contract, the architectural firm. I've participated in other programs like this through the Sierra Nevada Conservancy. They're great to work with. And when you read these grant guidelines, it's almost scary how aligned they are with what we're looking to do in Groveland. And they give you the money to be able to do the planning to be prepared for the state program that is the $28 million grant that's going to come out next July. Maximum, I don't remember if there is a maximum on that, but anyway, this grant program will prepare us for that application. We'll have everything dialed in, all the plans and graphics and budgets and relationships and everything we need to be successful for that. So really, really excited. Jen and Rachel are going to be working on that and keeping that going forward. That is a continuous grant cycle. So they basically take your proposals. You'll work with a local staff from the Sierra Nevada Conservancy, and then they'll bring it back to their board at some point. Every quarter, their board takes action. And so it'll be four more rounds of awards for this planning money.
Okay.
So the last thing is just, we submitted a response to the county Yonder Yosemite project. The county has it in the preliminary planning stages. That is the lodging units and facilities, restaurant, clubhouse, outdoor movie theater, a bunch of different things that they have planned on the site of the SCAR. It's a big project. It's a lofty project. They've done these projects in many other places. They just finished one in, I think it's Wawona, so on the south side of the park, and they also are working on one in Avila Beach down in San Luis Obispo County. And so they've got some money and some backers, and they're really aggressive about this project. But our response was that they have to follow our policies. They're going to have to submit an application for service and a deposit for engineering, and then we will be able to review their project in detail, because that site has some infrastructure needs and issues. So it's going to be pretty expensive, whatever they do there. But anyway, we're all over that. Okay, I'm done.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions, anybody? Okay, moving on to Louie.
Hello. Okay. On my report here, you can see I added a couple new graphs onto that. And then biggest highlights that we had one area of our collection system that had some manholes that got buried from past storms, and we could not locate them. So we had some CCTV footage done on Otter/Ferret Court and located all those manholes, had the whole sewer line inspected. And also with that, we have an encroachment permit we've been working on for a gentleman building the house up there. So we found his lateral and marked out exact location of the sewer line for him. Let's see here. We actually started looking at clearing our easement in Big Oak Flat for our sewer line easement. It's the same thing. We had them down there marking that out as well. And it's just overgrown with blackberry bushes, and some of the terrain has changed a little bit from past storms. Let's see here. We've moving into the water side. We had two water breaks. We had one 4-inch water main that was hit by the county changing out a culvert, and one service leak on Dyer Court where the manifold just kind of just blew off at the end. And it's in the same area that we've had multiple problems with. All of those got resolved though, and the county hitting our line, changing the culvert, was a little bit of a, we had like misalignment with our water line with the gentleman that went out there and marked it. So we weren't off too far, but it wasn't as deep as we thought as either. So, we worked with the county and got it fixed. Also with that, you can see, I don't know if you guys have driven past Deer Flat or not, but we have water leaking in the road right there, and we're trying to come up with a method of where we don't have to dig up the brand new asphalt. So we will see on that, but most likely if all else fails, we'll be digging up the brand new Caltrans asphalt. So other than that, also we have our service truck that we've been waiting for about a year now. It's our mechanics truck. Mm-hmm. You should be seeing that as a purchased, paid for truck by Nick's board meeting. We is actually at the Lodi truck getting the crane body put on it. And so we're looking in another 3 weeks, they said, to have it completed. So it's taken a year. And so most of that was due to COVID, slowing production down. And mm-hmm. apparently all trucks, doesn't matter what size as of right now, are been kind of delayed. So other than that, has anybody got any questions?
How are the wastewater flow working with the people that we were like at the end of the summer peak up here? During the summer it's usually really high. Has that gone down? I don't see that. I guess it's the effluent.
Yes, that's the first one there, the wastewater received.
Yes.
It's fluctuated a little bit. Like even on times when people thought it was slow up here, we've actually had higher flows. And this actually goes off the meter that's going into the plant itself. So that does, we don't actually have a meter that shows incoming into the plant, like as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg can manipulate this by how much flow he wants going into his plant. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like a reference of partial sewage flow, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're looking at with the headworks project that we do have coming up, which is actually moving forward on that as well. Mm-hmm. We're going to be installing flow meters at the beginning of the headworks, and we'll be able to see exact flow coming into our E-basin. So,
okay, so the possibility of having little less smell odor at the headworks as a whole plant would be greater, right?
Hopefully. Okay. I'm not going to say it's all going to go away, but with the internal fed system for those screen and compactor systems,
right,
should eliminate some of the odors for sure.
Okay.
And I know that there's been talk about some sour smells around, and a lot of that is like we get a heavy grease loading, and when it comes in, it coats the equipment at the headworks, and that's the time that you can really get that sour, weird smell coming off the plant. So we did purchase some new degreasers and products, but it's been coming really challenging for us because once you get into a product that's really, really good for us and works really well, the state kind of goes no more. And so new guidelines out in California says you can't use that type of stuff in California anymore. So we got to try something different. So we've been bouncing back and forth. So we've had this new stuff in the system for about a month. And so I don't know if that's some of the reason why the grease has been coming in a lot more, but we're still monitoring it and trying to figure that out. So
you had a lot of water meter testing this month, 42. Is that because people are noticing their new bill?
No, a lot of that too comes down to misreads or higher than normal reads for the read. Okay. And this month coming up too as well, you're going to have it because we are doing the 6 month audit as well for the zero usage meters. So,
Okay.
I am very much appreciative of the graphs to show the trend over time of consumption and production, and it'll become more relevant as we get to know those numbers and we do projects that have an effect on them. Mm-hmm. For example, on the wastewater inflow, what Louis was explaining is that we don't have a way right now to gauge how much flow actually does come from all the lift stations and all the customers, because all we know is what goes through the plant. Mm-hmm. So the change in the storage reservoir is not documented. It's just the amount that's used out of that flows through the plant. So mm-hmm. we could have some really, really peaky days or months, and that all showed up in storage in the reservoir, but didn't go through the plant. So so we're going to meter it differently. But then also when we do we do some INI inflow and infiltration, you can see that during the winter months, we have some serious spikes. Mm-hmm. It's gotten a little bit better, it looks like. It may have been just because we didn't have as much rain in January and February. But anyway, this, it's really, really good stuff. I appreciate the effort that they went through to get it on here.
Thank you. Any other comments from the directors? Okay, and we will move on to Jennifer.
Okay, I'm gonna make mine as brief as possible because I know we are all very tired for this almost 3.5 hour meeting. Other things to start with, we have been working with, well, it's kind of been through the state, but with the county and some things like our getting the playground reopened. The state finally issued a press release that allowed for outdoor playgrounds to reopen. So the district did take the fencing down around the playground as well as reopening the bathrooms. And we have an individual who comes every Sunday who does a deep sanitation of all the district facilities. And the playground has been included to his scope of work when he's here. So it's really exciting to get that back open. I know specifically my kids have loved it, and we were just down there the other day and there was a ton of kids down there. So it was kind of neat to see the children back out being able to be kids and play on a playground again. We are also doing the movies in the park. As you guys saw, we got the okay from the county to go ahead and move forward with that, with obviously COVID-19 guidelines in place. So we've been working together to ensure that the first event, which is going to be this Friday, and we hope to see you guys there, is, you know, completely compliant with that, and we have all the measures in place for a successful event. And the trunk or treat also is going to be moving forward with the same and similar guidelines as the movies in the park, which is monitoring temperatures, one-way entrance, one-way exit, you know, social distancing, mask required when you can't, all the stuff that we've really familiarized ourselves with over the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. We are in the final stages of our Springbrook upgrade. We have, that will be happening, it looks most likely the October 26th. We have IT, on, reserve for both the 26th and the 27th. If for some reason we run into glitches or it goes over, that day, but the district will be effectively upgraded to the newest version of Springbrook at the end of this month. There's been a significant amount of time spent on our file management organization project that we've been talking about for months and months now, and we will continue to talk about for even more and more months to come. Admin staff and Pete spent a lot of time specific to all of the documents related to projects, like public work projects, and how we outline those and how they lay out in like an organizational chart of where things fall. So making a lot of forward progress there. We received another follow-up questionnaire for the municipal services review that we just completed again. So that's been sent off. So hopefully that will be the last that we get as far as municipal services review goes. Moving on to the NBS questionnaire that we received for the impact fee study, that's next on the list to start going through. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I will touch upon is just, we received an email from Dane from CSA. I'm sure maybe everybody received it, about the HEROES Act that they passed without any modifications to the coronavirus relief fund to special districts. Mm-hmm. So it's a $2.2 trillion bill, and CSDA is, you know, advocating for, it's HR 7073, the Special Districts Provide Essential Services Act, and they were encouraging all special districts to write to our representatives. So I think it was after the email was sent, so it was like the beginning of October, I spent some time putting some correspondences together that touched upon their talking points of why it was so important for this bill to include special districts in their funding relief. So hopefully, you know, they will amend it. Yeah, that's my admin report.
Thank you. Good news.
John just looks like he's in agony. So I
know he does.
My back's killing me. I can't do a 4-hour move.
No. Well, yeah, we haven't done this for a long time. But we had a lot of important stuff to get through. So thank you, everybody, for hanging in there. That's fine, John. Thanks, everybody else, for hanging in there.
Consent calendar.
I'm getting there, Bob. We still have a forum. Let's quickly get the consent calendar, then John can
Oh, John.
Okay, I'm going to make a motion to approve the consent calendar, everybody.
Second.
Anybody have any questions? Okay. All in favor?
Hold on. It's been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Swan to approve the consent calendar. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards is absent. Director Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries, 4 in favor, 1 absent.
Okay, and we are now adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Hey, thanks. We made it.
Sorry, Janet. I thought you were getting too eager to get going.
No.